This reminds me of my first experience in radio. It was back in the early 80s.
People with disability and mental health.
There's always controversy with us.
The mysteries of the mind and consciousness.
And we might get to the bottom of something, or we might start something new.
We're going to run the gamut and we're going to have a good time.
Waking Braves. No, not Waking Braves. We're Breaking Waves.
Breaking Waves?
Breaking Waves.
Breaking Waves.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
We are back.
And tonight on the program, we're bringing you an episode on the subject of passion. What springs to mind? You may be thinking of young lovers embracing, or someone pursuing their hobbies or goals with enthusiasm and vigor. But as with so many words that we cover on this show, when looking into the origins of it, we actually find that it was originally associated with suffering. So it's really kind of the opposite of how we use it most of the time today.
And we find that with so many words.
Yeah, it comes up again and again and again, this kind of gradual inversion of meaning across history.
Which makes it quite confusing sometimes. These days, the word passion is, it makes me think of people kissing at the drive-in.
Yes, and that has its own colloquialism, the passion pit, that back row of the drive-in movie theatre reserved for the young lovers.
There you go. Or perhaps people acting out, people sort of being possessed, acting out in a sort of possessed way, possessed by passion.
Almost as though they become puppets of these different emotional states, these intense emotional states.
Yes. Yeah, let's see what comes up when we look this up in our search engines. So Google tells us the origins are Greek and Latin once again for this one, and originally it's connected to the Greek story of pathos. Pathos is connected with feelings, suffering.
And pathos has come up on the show before, on the suffering episode.
Being acted upon by some external force which is causing your suffering.
So that's interesting, because the idea of being acted upon by something external, whereas the modern usage of passion, it's used as an energy that seems to be more self-generative.
Well, I think we have a different understanding of our humanity now. we tend to have a way of a narrative around emotions and feelings that probably was quite different. Emotions appear like possessions, like being possessed by a spirit or something. You could say.
And that's, of course, especially prominent in cases of, like, yeah, when you see things like mood swings. Sorry, but go on. Yeah.
Yeah, no, when you live in a world full of spirits that do things, if that's how you explain the things that happen in the world, then obviously that's where that comes from.
Mm.
Some kind of spirit. Some kind of passions come from spiritual possession, perhaps. And this is not a modern way of thinking about our experience.
This is the old way.
Even though it might be appropriate sometimes that people do act like they're possessed.
Yes, and this despiritualization of language, this secularization, shall I say, it comes up in so much of what we cover and just so many words we use all the time. I think an example that comes to mind, because we're talking about spirit, is the idea of someone being spirited. You know, a modern person would say that to describe something that's high energy or enthusiastic or uplifting. But for the more spiritual or religious use, it's referring to the idea of a soul or some other kind of principality.
Well, speaking of spirits, chronologically, the next thing that happened was the Renaissance, the Reformation of the Church. That's when the idea of the Passion of Christ, or passion associated with religious beliefs.
And this comes across in, yes, the Passion of the Christ and also the Passion Play, which is the reenactment of Christ's crucifixion.
And that was quite common when I was a kid, passion plays, but I don't know of any going on at the moment. It's the Christmas season.
They've probably taken the religion out of that term too. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if you were seeing like non-religious theatre being presented as, it's a passion play.
Yeah, so that the Passion of Christ really centers on his suffering. So once again, it's a reinforcement of this idea of endurance and suffering, of pain and misery.
And yet it's seen as a noble thing within the Christian faith.
This is completely different to the way we use the word now, because it doesn't really have these connotations of suffering, except in extreme cases where the person does act in a possessed fashion. But a lot of the time we use it just to refer to a strong emotion, basically, of any kind, to be passionate about your writing or your craft or your work or your hobby or your girlfriend, you know.
Yeah, and it's associated often with acting on that, you know, pursuing that passion. Of course, it could be, passion could be felt in a more private way, but then it still implies that it's a very consuming emotion.
Yeah, it's the spice of life for us, passion. Whereas, you know, in the past it was the spice of misery, misery basically. It's not a bad thing to be passionate.
No.
In our current use of the word.
That's right, that's right. You know, there could be examples where there's too much passion and it has to be modified somehow, of course, but generally it's seen as a positive thing, and it's like people are really encouraged to these days to find things in their life that they're passionate about. You'll hear of this term being bandied around as like a justification for someone quitting their job. Oh, I just wasn't passionate about it, or I want to find something I'm more passionate about, or even within ending relationships as well, those kind of things. And so there's a kind of seems to be a lot of people chasing this emotional intensity and seeing it as a prerequisite for a fulfilling life in this strange world in which we live.
I guess like most things, it's all about balance. And too much passion can be a problem, and not enough is also a problem. But I can give you an example of too much passion, and that would be a movie called Dance with a Stranger that came out in the
85, 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
I remember watching it when it came out, and it's about a woman named Ruth Ellis who worked in a bar, a speakeasy. I think it was around the time of
Prohibition
in America, and she meets this guy, and I think she has a child, so she's like a single mum. She's doing it hard, especially back in those days. And she met this guy, and I don't think he treated her particularly well, and she ends up killing him, and she was the last woman to be executed for murder.
To be hung.
Yes. And it made quite an impression on me. And Riley tells me it's been remembered well.
That's right. It has very high ratings online from audiences and critics. But I'd never even heard of this movie before we did this show, so I'm excited to check it out. Dance with a Stranger, starring Miranda Richardson. Yeah, I'll give it a whirl. But yes, Crimes of Passion. This is the idea that rather than a crime being a cold, calculating, premeditated act, it's something that happens in the moment because of this degree of emotional intensity taking over and in a sense dictating the outcome. And that's what distinguishes it from the more of the calculated kind of crime, right?
And this is a big area in courts, because they have to make this distinction about a person's intention. And it's very important in a lot of cases to establish this. In fact, the sentencing of people is all based on their intention, so that if you can prove in a court case that you didn't intend the outcome, they're much more lenient on you. A crime of passion is probably excusable, more excusable than a cold-blooded, premeditated.
Because it has an element of humanity that, you know, a jury would find more relatable.
It also speaks to the idea of being acted upon by some external force. The way that the Greeks originally intended the concept.
Yes, yes. And John, you brought up the interesting point that the idea of passion in the past to mean being acted upon, but in the idea of its use today, the passionate one is the one doing the crime as opposed to the recipient of the crucifixion, shall we say, acting on it emotionally.
Yes, the perpetrator is the passionate one rather than the victim.
Yes, there we go. So, yes, we have the three eras. We have the suffering and the religious sort of veneration, and we have the modern era, which is really all about emotion. And, you know, if someone says, oh, I just wasn't emotionally invested in it, it's another way of saying I wasn't passionate enough about it to want to keep doing it. And there is, of course, the dark side of passion, and it's made me run across a new word called limerence, which I hadn't heard of until today. And it is, this describes a state of passion that would be regarded as unhealthy by modern psychologists and psychiatrists. And it's limerence is the mental state of being madly in love or intensely infatuated when reciprocation of the feeling is uncertain. This state is characterized by intrusive thoughts and idealization of the loved one, typically with a desire for reciprocation. This is accompanied by feelings of ecstasy or despair, depending on whether one's feelings seem to be reciprocated or not. Research on the biology of romantic love indicates the early stages of intense romantic love, also called passionate love, resembles addiction. But academics do not currently agree on how love addicts are defined.
Interestingly, academics are commenting on this because it's, you know, emotions are a field of science, psychology, and the way we explain feelings and emotions now, they didn't have those ways of explaining such things in past times, and this is probably is why that they conjured up spirits. The idea of being possessed by a spirit, you know, some kind of angry spirit has got hold of you. You know, whereas now we can just say, look, you're just having a feeling because you're having a bad day because, you know, you're off your meds or those things happen to you. And we've got a different understanding of our psyche, of our mind.
And this, of course, we always seem to get back to this too, but the machine model, right, of thinking about your mind or your consciousness. And so if you do think that you're like a robot or a computer and it's all just a formula, like, or just chemical reactions, then this is what leads people then to extrapolate and say things like, love is just a delusion. It's just your self-replicating chemical mechanisms, like creating this like idea in your head. And it's not so externalized. I mean, a good example of the old school of thought about love in a kind of more allegorical way is the idea of being shot by Cupid's arrow. And I think that's a good way as I need to describe how it can feel for those moments when you do get taken away, taken over by like a certain feeling for someone.
Well, these days we have the idea of the left and the right hemispheres of the brain and the idea that our mind has different hemispheres of operation and that the idea that you have logical thoughts happening on one side and emotional responses to your environment happening on the other side, and that in different people the blend between these two things are different. So you have people that are fiery and reactive and you have people who are very logical and calm all the time. This is just a narrative we've developed to explain our humanness. And they just had different narratives in bygone days.
Yes, and this is part of why we see this change in the meaning of words.
A possession becomes just a strong feeling.
Yeah, what possessed you to do that? People say that, but they don't literally mean, I want to know.
But there it is, right there in the language.
Like so much in our world, these notions of how we used to think are hidden in plain sight, as they say, and they're the legacy that has been passed down and distorted over the years.
Well, speaking of drive-ins, my favourite beverage was the creaming soda. How about you? You used to be able to get Fanta creaming soda or Coke, I think.
I was more of a lemonade guy.
Lemonade. Well, there was there's another drink from that era called Passio Nectar, which was a marvellous syrupy concoction that I believe you can still buy now.
I believe the Kirk's brand is the one in which this passion-flavoured soft drink is under.
Which always made me think of passion off chicks.
Yeah.
Which was a term that we used to use back in the day in the 70s. This seems to have fallen out of favour.
Yes, and I think this is due to the Americanization of our culture and that sort of influence, and also the decline of Australian culture, because back in the 70s, you know, we really had our own kind of thing going on, right, in terms of the movies and the rock music and stuff like that. We were making more of a kind of we were more culturally relevant back then. Let's just be real about it.
Well, it's more meaning to the term passion pit, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's not just a strong emotion pit. There's something else going on there as well.
Yeah, the passion. And nowadays I reckon young people probably say making out.
Passion which is was that passion.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, so the make out, I guess.
That's the Yankee influence. But it's interesting, you know, Australians, we like things derived from this word passion, and there's the soft drink isn't the only product. There's also there's Passion Pop, which is a sparkling wine with various, it comes with different fruit flavors. And it was kind of one of those sort of girly young person kind of drinks, you know, you'd hear about, it's the kind of drink you'd hear about when people first get into drinking and they want
Alco-Pops.
Yeah, We're talking about Alco-Pops here.
Teenage alcohol, fizzy drinks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Passion fruit is a marvellous thing. A chock block full of seeds and passion.
That's right, John. And
there's all different kinds of passion fruit, you know. Did you know that? There's the little kind of shriveled up sort of ones that are common. But my dad used to grow passion fruit in the backyard, and they were much bigger and a different colour. They were kind of a lighter colour, and they're huge. You ever seen those ones?
I think so.
They're kind of smooth too. They do go sort of crinkly when they get old, but they're kind of smooth instead of that brown texture.
Well, apparently the fruit is related to the flower somehow. It falls under the same genus.
Is that right? The passion flower. Now, the passion flower is an interesting one. I know that, I just read that it's a herbally, it's used as an anti-anxiety type medicine. But I also know that can be used in an ayahuasca-like preparation, which generally consists of two components. One is the plant that has the DMT in it, which does nothing if you eat it. You need to eat it in combination with another plant, which makes it active in your body. And that's the vine that they put with it. The South American shamans use a vine, but you can use passion flower, apparently.
And this name passion, I believe, relates to the religious idea as well. Because this genus of fruit and plant, it's prominent in South America, so apparently the name, so they say, was applied to it by the Spanish, what would you call them? Immigrants.
The monks.
Yes, the missionaries.
Yeah, those guys.
Yeah, so they applied that to it. And apparently it was also known as the flower of five wounds to illustrate the crucifixion imagery there. Yeah, because I guess in that era, they were trying to convert them, all those missionaries, they were trying to get the indigenous people into Christianity. And so maybe applying that name to this type of plant and this fruit was a way to like show Christ within nature. Examples of that.
Traditionally used in Western herbal medicine to relieve sleeplessness by reducing disturbed sleep. What is that? It relieves sleeplessness by reducing disturbed sleep. What a strange sentence. And reducing the time it takes to fall asleep. Hey, it knocks you out, maybe.
A powerful flower, perhaps.
Apparently so. What are your passions in life? It sounds like a question off a dating site, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of become a shorthand for meaning.
What gets you out of bed? You know, what lights your fire?
Whereas if you were asking that question back in medieval times, it would mean what spiritual suffering afflicts you.
What demons perhaps possess you, good neighbor?
Yeah. So, yes, once again, things become the opposite.
In the modern world, life is fairly unexciting without it.
That's right, a life devoid of passion. One's mind immediately imagines that that would be rather dull. And so, I suppose a life of following one's passion, it's a bit like that Joseph Campbell idea of follow your bliss. But you got to find out what it is that you're passionate about first. You've got to find something to get passionate about.
Well, the things I'm passionate about are the things that do get me out of bed. And when I don't have passion, I don't have any motivation. I'm kind of the kind of person, what am I trying to say? I'm the kind of person that needs to have passion in their life to be able to do things. I'm not very good at the mundane. I get things done, like all of us, but I'm not really... I need to be inspired to apply myself. And one of the things that inspire me is a sense of being passionate about what I'm doing. And I'm really not very good at doing all the other stuff. And I've got better at it as I've got older, because I've grown up, you know, in some ways. But definitely...
Yeah, I relate to that, honestly, and I think at the moment in my life I'm trying to become a bit more excited, a bit more motivated about the more mundane things that you have to do to make your life better. And so I'm trying to get passionate about my own health and being a good custodian to my body and that whole way of existence, whereas in the past, the areas of passion has been all about escapism. But I think because that escapism hasn't been as effective for me lately, and plus I'm getting older, you know, and so it's an invitation to kind of get passionate about taking care of myself, I think.
Well, it's a bit infectious as well, because if you do have a spark in your life and you are passionate about things, it comes to... fill in all the areas in between. It kind of improves the whole day when you've got something in that day you're doing that you really love to do. Everything else is also enhanced in the same way, I find.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's kind of, it all sort of can radiate out like that.
Yeah, on days where I'm feeling miserable or flat or uninspired, something that can change my day is to look for that bit of passion somewhere. Where is that spark? I've got to find it somewhere. Ah, there it is.
And may
the spark be with you.
That's right, wherever you may find it.
Is that the end of the show?
We thank you for listening. And we wish you well during this holiday season.
And we hope you will join us again soon on Breaking Waves.
Goodbye for now.
Thank you.
listening to People Powered Radio, proudly supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The Community Broadcasting Foundation resources community-owned and operated media stations just like this one that connect people and tell vital, local stories so that we all enjoy a more vibrant, inclusive Australian culture and healthy democracy. Find out more about our work at cbf.com.au.